A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the Upswing. We are proudly presented by the good, community-minded people at Horicon Bank. Happy Labor Day weekend. Take some time this weekend, no matter what, to remember the origins of the day. It goes back to 1882. And obviously, it signals present day, back to school and end of summer. But remember the core purpose of the weekend, to honor the social and economic contributions of the American worker, the historic struggles all around for fair hours and safer workplaces and better wages, right? No matter where or how you work, I want you to remember to build community in all that you do and work hard and play hard. Also, I want you to eat well and, you know, support the local farmers markets and the local restaurants and all that stuff that builds community in whatever neighborhood you're in. So today, we're going to capture that spirit of good hard work. We're going to dig a little deeper into the local and national restaurant scenes with Rachel Bernard. Rachel is the dining, I like to call her dining reporter and dining critic at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Rachel is going to join us. She is a hard worker for sure, a true pro and really an insider. She's going to give us the rundown of what's opening in the area, maybe why they're opening, talk about some menu trends and some price trends and more. Then later in the show, we're going to look at the state of back to school from the breakfast and lunch standpoint with the Hunger Task Force. Jonathan Hansen is the chief strategy officer with the Hunger Task Force. Jonathan is going to join us to tell us what's going on at Hunger Task Force for the remainder of the year. But it's Labor Day weekend. You're probably getting ready for a barbecue, neighborhood event, however you're going to celebrate. You may do it with a beer or two. I say celebrate responsibly if you choose to do so. But we're going to go, as we do at the beginning of every show, two up quickly with a beer twist.
Now, it's time for the
two, count 'em, two.
Two up on the upswing.
Number one, Coors gear. Would you wear it? Molson Coors Beverage Company and Contour Brands Apparel that makes Wrangler have teamed up for a partnership to launch Wrangler times Coors Banquet Collection. It's a limited edition of clothing. It's going to feature 20 different pieces with Coors branding. Now, it's a collaborative, strategic move by Molson Coors for sure to connect with fans beyond beer. Be interesting to see how this brand comes together. Western gear, definitely hot. So I think it's going to be a big hit, but let me know your thoughts. Texts, emails, and social are encouraged. Second up, Plaza is almost ready right here in downtown Milwaukee. A restaurant and tavern featuring burgers, a wide variety of craft beer is coming this fall to downtown Milwaukee's Velar Phillips Plaza, Draft & Co. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reports this week will be opening in November. It will have an amazing burger from a place called Crave in Shorewood, 32 draft lines, and possibly soup and ice cream. Stay tuned for more information on Draft & Co. that will open this fall, this November, right here in downtown Milwaukee. Welcome back to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Joining us in studio, our guest for today is Milwaukee Journal Sentinel dining critic Rachel Bernard, also the curator of the Dish newsletter, which is newly refabricated, right, Rachel?
Yeah, we just revamped it, and I share a little bit more insider tips in it as well, so you can get that in your inbox every Thursday.
Very good. A true trusted voice you are, not only in the city, but across the state, and you've been chronicling not only what's new, what's closing, what's opening, where the scene's heading. So we're going to dive into it all. And I don't know, everyone wants to be an insider when it comes to restaurants. So I really appreciate you taking time and, you know, help make us all better insiders when it comes to food and dining in our fine city. So one of your recent stories highlighted all the new spots that are coming in the fall. Can I go through those quickly with you and have you give us a little flavor on each?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so Cassis on Water Street in the Third Ward and in the new tower. What is it all about?
So this is a really big one, a very exciting one that was announced last year. So this comes from Chef Kyle Null, who people would know from Birch.
Okay.
And it's going to be a French cafe and bistro. So they're going to be serving all day from breakfast through dinner. And it's in a really huge, they're building out the space now. So I've been following the updates on, how things are looking and coming along. So it's going to be, it could be upscale, more low key during the day, but it's going to be a really, really beautiful space.
Yeah, right on the river,
yes.
Too, with a river frontage on the west side of the building.
Yes.
So it's going to be amazing. I saw one of the investors in that project recently, and he was just really excited about the concept and the energy that they're building there.
Yeah, we don't really have anything quite like it in Milwaukee, so I'm looking forward to their late fall opening.
All right, Radish in the Bayview neighborhood on Delaware.
Yes. So Radish is from a chef named Michaela Erickson, and she was going to open. She's been a caterer for years around the city and under the name Radish. So she was going to open her restaurant on KK.
Okay.
Right next to Wiggle Room, but she, this spring, realized she needed more space to figure out what she wanted to do. So now she's on Delaware, just, a block south of At Random, the bar. So what she's going to be doing is doing kind of like a farm-to-table, like small plates, kind of a small condensed dinner menu, but it's also going to be a market where people can buy, things that she's already prepared just right there. Mm. So really fun concept.
Yeah, and a great... It seems like a great fit for the Bayview neighborhood.
Absolutely.
Too. Like a little bit of grab and go and the marketplace concept and a restaurant. It just kind of, it has that vibe in the neighborhood.
For sure.
All right. Let's go back downtown to Water Street. Sushi Bay?
Sushi Bay.
It's like the rolling sushi concept,
yes,
right?
Yes, the conveyor belt sushi.
Okay, all right.
There is a location in Kenosha, so there's already a Kenosha location.
Okay.
And they're bringing it downtown now for their second location, and they're doing a complete build out. And the way it's going to work is, we don't have one like that in Milwaukee, so I'm very excited for it. You sit at a booth, and there'll be a conveyor belt running through the booths, and on it will be covered plates of sushi. And the plates will be different colors, so you know what price point they'll be. So you can just grab them off of the conveyor belt, eat them, and then when you're done, the server comes through and counts up how much it will be, and you're on your way. So kind of a fun concept.
Very good. We're talking with Rachel Bernard, the dining critic at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Let's stay downtown right here in the 3rd Street Market Hall. You had a big story about the new burger and ice cream spot that's opening here.
Yes.
Tell us all about that, how they got here, and what to expect.
Sure. So BB Zito is their name, and it is a Minneapolis-based restaurant. So they have four locations in Minneapolis, and this is the first location outside of Minnesota. So I've been peeking around their menu. We know that they're going to have like a burger, a chicken sandwich, chicken tenders. But I think what they're really known for is their ice cream.
Okay.
They've gotten a couple awards for their ice cream, and they have really fun different flavors like maracuja, and they have a lot of vegan flavors too. So that should make our vegan friends very happy.
And old school ice cream, not custard?
Not custard.
Okay.
Yes,
right.
Ice cream.
That's okay. We can do that here in Milwaukee.
There's room for both.
That's all right. All right. That's something to look forward to for sure. When you look at the new concepts and through your reporting, what feels different? I mean, obviously, new hotspots are something we all take to. But what do you have? What's your sense of like maybe what's missing or what to really expect in terms of all this newness?
Yeah, so I've been really excited this year in the past year or two that more like Southeast Asian restaurants are opening. There's an incredible spot in Bayview called Ni Burmese that I reviewed earlier this summer. It's a Burmese restaurant from two refugees, and it's absolutely delicious. There's another Burmese restaurant that opened just late last year on Lincoln Ave on the south side called Kai Asan Kai. It's super, it's really, really delicious too. We're also getting some more Philippine, like food from the Philippines. There's a great pop-up at Love Cafe in Shorewood on Sundays called Bad English. And they're bringing more Filipino food to the area too. So I've been really excited to see that. I think diners are getting more adventurous and willing to try these things. So I'm just hoping we get more of that.
Very good. We're talking with Rachel Bernard, the dining critic of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. When we come back, more on restaurant trends and the state of the restaurant scene right here in Milwaukee. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. All things dining. Nothing builds community like food, right? That's what we're all about on the show, building community in all of our neighborhoods across the state. Rachel, what menu trends are you seeing in existing restaurants around the area? Are we trending towards more healthy? Is it a price point thing? Like, what are you seeing in terms of menus?
Well, especially this time of year, it's, you know, seasonal ingredients.
Yeah.
We used to call it like farm to table back in the day, but now it's like local ingredients, seasonal ingredients. And I think it's wonderful because it really gives, you know, a chance for Wisconsin agricultural community to shine. So, you know, you have places like Birch who heavily relies on local ingredients, all the way to the newly opened Mediterranean restaurant Purse Lane, which I have a review out this week about.
Great. That's going to bring that like dining destination back to the east side. Like, I mean, it was there with the former,
sure,
with Arden, but like, I don't know. It's going to happen.
I hope so. Yeah. I really want a resurgence on the east side. I lived there when I first moved to Milwaukee, and it's very special to me. So I'd love to see more restaurants opening up there.
Good. I guess on that destination point, like, are you seeing certain pockets, whether it's Tosa or like East North Avenue? Is it still the Third Ward? Like, what are those? I don't know, those distinct areas of dining. Do you see an explosion coming to one neighborhood or not for the rest of the year and into 2026?
Yeah, what I'm happy about is things are kind of opening up everywhere. So I'm not seeing one big pocket. Yeah. I mean, Bayview's always going to be huge. Wauwatosa, there's always something fun opening up there too. But you know, I think West Dallas actually is a really underrated community for food. There are a lot of great restaurants there, and you know, a lot of great ethnic cuisine over there too. Yeah. So I love dining out in West Dallas, but I'm hoping for more downtown as well.
All right, downtown's a true neighborhood, and I think everyone when you're looking to relocate or kind of reemerge, downtown's always on the radar, but sometimes the price points make more sense in the suburbs, and there's so many great options, and that's what it's all about. It's that regional approach to not only economic development, but to dining.
Sure.
Let's talk a bit about kind of all the recent national attention. Do you get a sense from restaurant owners and chefs that, like, the vibe from Top Chef and from national attention from the New York Times and USA Today and others, has that impacted business? Does it continue to impact business on a local level?
Yeah, you know, I've asked some chefs about that. I call it the Top Chef bump, you know, if they're still seeing that, especially, you know, Dan Jacobs and his restaurants, Esterev and Dan. And they do say that they're seeing people come in talking with them about, you know, they heard Milwaukee is such a great dining town. They want to see it. But I think what's really exciting is a lot of the chefs that are bringing in visiting chefs from across the country. So as these chefs come here, you know, they get to see what Milwaukee has to offer, too. And they can bring it back and tell people, you know, Milwaukee is a great dining town.
Yeah. I mean, that's recruitment and retention 101, right? Sure. Your friends, you bring your friends, you're like, ooh, and they're going to go out and talk about it.
Exactly.
Amplify it. Let's kind of stay on the state of the state from a business standpoint on the restaurant end. Are operators seeing higher costs in terms of food and labor? And are you getting a sense of pricing from the consumer standpoint that, wow, you know, it's a little bit more expensive than it used to be?
Yeah. Yes. Of yes, course. That yes. is. That's on the top of their minds. Definitely. So there are rising costs with food, as we've all seen, and you know, equipment, even production materials too. So yeah. The restaurant owners do have to, you know, most of the time up their prices to kind of balance that. But just know that they're not pocketing that money. You know, right. they're trying to give you the lowest price they can while still keeping their restaurant in business.
Yeah. I mean, everyone says, you know, it's a low margin business to begin with.
Absolutely.
And it's so much about design and community building and the experience. And no matter what, I don't know. You should be willing to pay a little bit more for that. That's what it's all about.
I think so.
Yes, for sure. So we have so many legacy places across the state. I mean, what's the role in those places? Like, you know, a Sanford or Three Brothers in terms of like stabilizing the dining map when new concepts are coming in.
Yeah.
Like, how do you see that from your dining critic lens?
Well, I think they're essential. You know, yeah. they're anchors in these communities, and I think that there's space for them and these new concepts as well. You know, over at Sanford, they've been in business for over 30 years, but they're still changing up their menu. They're still keeping it fresh. I remember on my first visit, I just couldn't believe how like hip the menu still seemed. And then over on the opposite side, you know, you have Three Brothers who's pretty much kept the same menu forever, yeah. but people love it. And
right.
what they do to stay in business for, you know, over 60 years is just excellent hospitality and just making you feel like you're dining in your grandma's kitchen. So I think those places are, you know, they're continue to do what they do and just, you know, keep things fresh or keep things hospitable and they'll stay in business.
Very good. We're talking with Rachel Bernard from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Rachel, when we come back, can we go home into your kitchen a bit and see what's in your freezer and your refrigerator?
I don't know if you want to do that, but sure.
All right. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. It's Labor Day weekend. You're probably cooking out, making some kind of creative, wonderful food-based choice, I'm sure, for you and your family. The restaurant critic, whenever I say that, Rachel, I'm like, she's not a critic. Like, you're a reporter. Like, talk about that for just a minute. Can I ask you? Like,
sure.
Are you a dining critic? Are you a reporter? Like, how do you frame that?
It's a hybrid.
Yeah.
I have to report on the dining industry, but I also have to be honest about my feelings about it yeah. as well. So, you know, like the critic word is harsh.
It is.
But
yes.
I try to come to it with a soft approach, you know, like I'm never nice. Going to slam a restaurant completely. And if I go to a restaurant that I don't really love, I'm just going to maybe bypass it and let that speak for itself. So
yeah.
it's a fine balance, but I really just want to uplift the restaurant community here.
All right. That's what it's all about. So if you're at home this Labor Day weekend, reach into the refrigerator. What are you looking at? I mean, you're eating a lot out and about. Is it a salad? Is it broth and bread? Like, what are you putting together that's like, wow, this is what I eat at home?
Yeah. Well, often it's leftovers from the restaurant yeah. I was at the
All
night
right.
before. But when I'm not doing that, I mean, I try to eat, you know, when I am eating the few meals I can at home, I'm trying to eat super healthy. So,
okay.
you know, for lunch today, I had a salad and, you know, I had oatmeal with blueberries for breakfast.
Good.
So try to keep it simple. But when I'm doing something like last minute, I'm not going out to eat. I've been making a lot of pad thai lately. So that's kind of my go-to last minute meal.
All right. Do you have any techniques from the chefs you've got to know that you implement at home? And like what if somebody's doing a barbecue this Labor Day weekend? Like, what's an insider tip?
Oh, I wish I knew. I don't really grill out myself that much, so I don't know about that. But I mean, there are just simple things you can do, from even like dressing up your, like if you're using like a jarred pasta sauce or something, there are little things you can do to dress it up and make it taste not so jarred. Like I put a little smoked paprika in it, a little crushed red pepper, extra garlic in every dish.
All right.
So yeah.
Okay, those are good tips. I like them. We love our local scenes here for sure, but there's always that take like, all right, what's the next big chain or the next big national operator that's looking at the area? Is there any chain that you're seeing that's, wow, they've been hunting around for a while and we can see an explosion of, is it Zaxby's? Is it like, who's coming to the area that you have an eye on?
Yeah, there's one that's top of mind that I would love to see here called Banchan. It's a Korean fried chicken restaurant. So I would love to see that in Milwaukee. And there are many locations in the Chicago area.
Okay.
There are a few locations in Minneapolis, Detroit. So I could see them coming here next. So my fingers are crossed for that.
All right. Finally, I want to just kind of go through a little lightning round as we close. We're talking with Rachel Bernard, the dining critic from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Does wonderful work, a true trusted voice in the restaurant world for all of us. What is the most, everyone wants to know, like, what's the hottest, kind of most buzzworthy restaurant right now?
I mean, it's almost impossible to get into right now, but 1033 Omakase.
Okay.
It's the Omakase Sushi Place in Walker's Point. They open reservations 2 months ahead of time, and they book out almost instantly. It's a fantastic place, you know, for good reason. It gets booked up quickly, but I'd say that's probably the hottest seat in town right now.
Okay. What's one dish that has summed up your 2025 so far?
I don't know about mine,
but
a George Webb burger.
Right. That is it. I was waiting for that. We had to get to George Webb's eventually. Yeah. I live very close to Cloud Red.
Oh.
And they obviously did the tribute to George Webb, which used to be there, and they make an amazing burger and veggie burger there too, actually.
Love Cloud Red.
Cloud Red, the food. I mean, not like I'm a dining critic, but the consistency there, they do a wonderful, wonderful job.
They sure do.
Yes. All right. One place that maybe deserves a little bit more love and maybe the line out the door every night that you just like, wow, this place is so great. I want them to do even better.
You know, it's hard to say because they're new, but I have been in love with the new Bayview restaurant Mothers. It is spectacular. It's so creative. The chef and owner, Vanessa Rose, does such incredible work there. And I've gone a couple times and I'll be reviewing it soon.
All right.
So I want to see more people go there. It's a really creative, wonderful space.
Okay. And then this probably is a hard one for you to answer, but if you have out-of-town guests, where are your go-to stops?
Oh, that's so tough. It kind of depends on who's going to be visiting.
Okay.
My brother, who used to live here, he always wants to go to Vanguard. He loves the sausages at Vanguard, so I'll take him there. If there's someone who is just a really, you know, is really into food, I'll take them to a place like Birch, you know, to show off what can be done with Wisconsin ingredients.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many places I could note. I really love Morel in Walker's Point, too. I think that place doesn't get as much love as it deserves either.
Yeah. All right, Rachel, anything else you want to conclude with? Anything else you're working on that you need to tell the world about?
Oh, well, I'm in the throes of my top 25 list, which will be coming out in a couple months. So I've been dining out a lot, making notes. So I'm really excited for that to come out. It's my biggest project of the year, and look for it in late October.
Very good. Rachel Bernard, the dining critic at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Rachel, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day, and we'll see you at a local restaurant soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Joining us in the studio from the Hunger Task Force is Jonathan Hansen, the Chief Strategy Officer. I mean, as a community, I think we all want to and we need to assure that everyone has equal access to food, and especially as we head into the new school year, a lot of, some interesting challenges on the table for sure. So, Jonathan, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to spend a little bit with us. You just wrapped up a countywide summer meals effort with, 180 different sites across the area, 500,000 meals. What did you learn, maybe, that schools can take and carry into their new school year?
Well, Jeff, first off, thank you for having me today.
Of course.
I think that the biggest thing that we can all learn from our summer meals program is that summer is the peak time for childhood hunger. This is why Hunger Task Force and our community partners are so active at this time of year. It's why we organize 180 meal sites. It's why we're projecting to serve 500,000 meals to kids, because when school ends, kids lose access to school meal programs. And that makes it all the more tough for a mom, a dad, a caretaker to make up those breakfast, lunches, and dinners every single day. So what I really always want people to know is that hunger is at its peak during the summer. It's not necessarily always during the holidays or the winter months, but summer is really critical in getting kids back to school healthy and ready to learn, and when those school meal programs kick back in.
Yeah. So on the collaboration side, did you work with different nonprofits and parks and providers throughout the summer? On this program?
The Summer Meals program is a collaborative, and it's nationally recognized by the USDA because of the model that we've established here in Milwaukee. And Hunger Task Force works to bring together the public parks of the Milwaukee Rec Division. Okay. We bring together community learning centers, the meal providers like CFI, private funders like Kohl's Department Stores, the USDA's federal nutrition programs. Mm-hmm. And we put all of that together to make sure that sites are open all summer long and they're providing not only breakfast and lunches through the summer food service program, but that third meal of the day, supper, that's provided by Kohl's. So we really make sure that there are three meals a day all summer long for kids.
Right. Takes a village to build community.
That's right.
Right? For sure. So as we build community and kind of tackle challenges and look at opportunities, what's the latest from DC in terms of SNAP and nutrition education? And how do you think that's going to impact, now, specifically Milwaukee families as we head into the new school year?
Obviously, a lot that we can talk about there with the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill this summer. But to put it in the most simple terms, what has been passed as it relates to the SNAP program is going to increase hunger in our communities and communities across the country. There have been massive changes and funding cuts to the SNAP program that are going to make it much more difficult for people to access, much more difficult for people to participate in. And then even longer term, there's going to be increased financial burden on the states that's going to make it much more difficult to execute the program and constrain it even further, likely.
So there's some federal funding that's ending at the end of September, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Specifically, there is funding ending for the SNAP education program, along with the benefits that provide families buying power for food through the SNAP program. There is an education arm that was completely eliminated this past summer, effective October 1st.
So what are next steps there then? Obviously, with a challenge, there's got to be a solution or several solutions, right? What, from the state and local partner standpoint, do you do to blunt the impact?
In terms of Hunger Task Force, the impact that our organization has felt is that we are losing $467,000 in education funding that we use to administer our nutrition education program. And so we're remaining committed to our program. We're not going to make any significant changes, but the opportunities are to continue to fund the program through private sources or potentially through new legislative opportunities, whether at the state or the federal level moving forward. But right now, we remain committed to this program. It's an extremely important program that helps to teach kids, teach families about healthy eating, how to shop on a budget, how to manage resources effectively, how to make healthy food choices. It's highly effective nationwide. For every $1 that's invested in this program, $10 are saved in healthcare costs. Mm-hmm. And it's just truly important for families who have those limited resources to make the most of those resources and make healthy choices.
We're talking with Jonathan Hansen from the Hunger Task Force. So when people see, read about, hear about cuts impacting local level. Does that ramp up donations on your side? Like, do you see that kind of pro-con?
Milwaukee has always been an extremely generous community, and Hunger Task Force has been in the community for over 50 years, supported 100% by our local community. And when there have been tough times, our community has always stepped up for us, whether that's a recession, a pandemic, in the aftermath of the One Big Beautiful Bill. These are all things that Hunger Task Force works hard on every single day. And people trust us to do that work. They know that our free and local model is unique and effective. They know that as advocates, we have the hungry's voice in mind when we are out there advocating for improved programs. And they know that we are the people to get the job done. And we're grateful for them for that.
Very good. When we come back, a little bit more with the Hunger Task Force, we're going to see what the organization is looking at for Q3 and Q4. And specifically, Jonathan, I want to ask you about new initiatives and insights that are shaping the fall plan from your lens. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We're looking at the impacts of federal cuts on the local level with the Chief Strategy Officer from the Hunger Task Force, Jonathan Hansen. Jonathan, thanks for taking time out of your day to spend a little bit of it with
Absolutely.
Us. Absolutely. So from an organizational lens, how are you adjusting strategies as you head into the end of the year here? What prioritizes maybe a little different for the organization? Obviously, we've been talking about back to school and the impacts of the meal programs and nutrition access. But what else shifts from an organizational standpoint?
Well, right now in Milwaukee County, Hunger Task Force is seeing a 35% increased need at local food pantries. The number one thing that is being cited as the driver of need is the increased costs of food, rent, housing, utilities, you name it. Inflation is really burdening families across our community. We're all feeling that right now. And the numbers at the food pantries are ticking up. Hunger Task Force is seeing increased service. And with all of the changes on the heels of the federal changes and SNAP funding cuts, we anticipate that need is going to continue to increase. Yeah. So really, there's, I think, two main ways that we're approaching this right now for our upcoming year here is that we are working to fortify our food bank, planning for potential extra food purchases, planning for being flexible.
Because donations will be down or just because the need will be more?
Because the need will be more. Okay. We're going to need to purchase more food to make sure that the food supply is intact at Hunger Task Force. Our food resources are strong right now, but not knowing the uncertainty of the days and months ahead, we are doing our best to be prepared for that so that we can be adaptive, we can pivot, we can respond to what the need might be. And the second thing that I would really encourage folks to keep in mind when it comes to Hunger Task Force is that we're coming up on a potential new farm bill for the U.S., and your voice as an advocate is also very important. So when it comes time to speak up to our local elected officials on both the state and the federal level, there are voices there that are speaking to the importance of the farm bill and the funding that it provides for food programs.
To specifically advocate for more local dollars for the school systems or what? I mean, can you give us a couple talking points there?
More resources for foods, more resources to support the SNAP program, more resources to support the SNAP education program, which has been eliminated. These are all things that we're going to start to see unfold here in the aftermath of the cuts and identify the advocacy opportunities to engage our networks.
All right. As I want to go back to kind of the back to school on a local level. You know, Wisconsin's ranked pretty low nationally in terms of breakfast, especially for low-income students. I think it's like 1 in 6 Wisconsin kids live in poverty already. Like what, as a new school year starts, is Hunger Task Force and other groups doing kind of meet that need, especially on the breakfast side?
Yeah, we're always advocating for our local school districts and school districts across the state and a lot of our statewide work for really good models for breakfast, particularly the breakfast after the bell. That's the one we always advocate for. If a school has the opportunity to provide their school breakfast to kids after the bell, it helps to give kids more time to get to school.
Sometimes there's that perception, wow, I got to get there super early for the breakfast, and I'm not going to be able to get my children there.
Mornings are busy.
Pick up in time. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And breakfast after the bell is proven time and time again to be the ideal breakfast model because it gives all kids a chance to have breakfast together.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're heading, you know, we're not too far away. We're still in the summer, but we're heading into the holiday season. I still get the sense that, you know, Thanksgiving time is so important to give. Is that from an organizational standpoint, like, is that the best time to be giving in terms of dollars and time and treasure? Or you're like, no, we're set for Thanksgiving. Like, just talk us through that from a donation model standpoint.
Well, I would say that hunger is a problem every day. And so donations and support are also important every single day. Yes, we do get a large influx of attention, support, and different programs and events around the holidays. Mm-hmm. But I would challenge folks, if you are looking for a volunteer opportunity, try the day after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Try January 2nd, February,
Take
March.
Take the day away from the malls and go volunteer.
Yes. Yeah, we need your help year-round at Hunger Task Force. We rely 100% on the community for donations to operate, as well as volunteers. We're supported by over 15,000 volunteers every year that do everything from pack boxes in our food sort room, build stock boxes for seniors, right now harvesting at the Hunger Task Force farm, working at the events we have in the communities. There is an activity and role for everyone to play at Hunger Task Force.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd highly recommend that as a family or organization or company standpoint. No matter if it's Hunger Task Force or another similar group, it's a great way to spend time and really, really give back. Do you have any new events or initiatives for the remainder of the year coming up?
Right now, Hunger Task Force's focus is really on making sure that our food bank is well stocked. We're planning for potential extra food purchases. We want to make sure that we have the resources ready to deploy into the community and that we are ready to respond to need.
Very good. Jonathan Hansen, Chief Strategy Officer at the Hunger Task Force. Jonathan, I appreciate your time and all the best for the remainder of the year.
Thanks so much, Jeff.